Coming up on Tech News Today, guess who's having the best post-PC era ever? Also, Mailbox invades iPad and Xbox invades your house. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Thursday, May 23rd, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, or online store. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TNT5. And by Tonks Coffee. Tonks offers a bi-weekly subscription. Tonks sources their beans directly from the growers. They're roasted and shipped within 24 hours, giving you the freshest coffee beans in the world. For a free sample, visit Tonks.org/TNT. That's Tonks.org/TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Aya Zakhtar.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show that keeps you up to date on the most important stories in the tech world, starting each time with the 10 stories you have to know about the news fuse. Twitter launched a rather limited version of two-factor authentication to secure login to your account. The service will text a code to a phone number that has been associated with your Twitter account. Got multiple accounts? Too bad. A phone number can only be associated with one account. And if you don't have your phone on you, there's no other method to get the code. Apps like TweetDeck will have to authorize individually on Twitter's application page with temporary passwords, and there's no way to create application-specific passwords either.
Samsung is a proud peacock because it sold more than 10 million Galaxy S4 smartphones to retailers and wireless operators less than a month after it debuted, which is the company's fastest-selling phone to date. The Galaxy S4's predecessor, the S3, hit the 10 million mark. In terms of global channel sales, that's more like shipping than actual sales, 50 days after its launch in 2012. And then the Galaxy S2 and the Galaxy S took 5 and 7 months, respectively. So up and up for Samsung.
According to HTC, its flagship phone, the HTC One, has sold 5 million units since its launch, so not as great as Samsung. An HTC exec says that it's too early to tell if it's doing really well or not. You know what's probably not going to sell so well for HTC? The HTC First, because UK carrier EE and Orange in France says that the HTC First is indefinitely delayed. So tough times for HTC.
Ouch.
First will be last, or not at all. Google has acquired Makani Power, a company that makes airborne wind-powered turbines to create energy. Google previously invested $10 million in the company in 2006 and $5 million in 2008. Makani just recently completed the first autonomous flight of its Wing 7 prototype. Google ex-director Astro Teller told TechCrunch regarding clean energy, Google for years has been interested in helping to solve this problem.
Mailbox, the Gmail-only iPhone app that famously made its users wait in a queue for access even after installing it in the App Store, has now released a native iPad app. Co-founder and CEO Gentry Underwood says an Android app is in the works, no specific date though, but that things are going swimmingly for the company after its acquisition by Dropbox back in March.
Over on Twitter, Kim.com is accusing Google, Facebook, Twitter, and Citibank of patent infringement involving two-step authentication. .com said he didn't sue the companies before, but might now because of what the U.S. did to him. .com's patent shows a method of authenticating using a secondary code sent via SMS or pager and was filed back in 1998. Ars Technica reports AT&T has a U.S. patent for two-factor systems predating .com's, and The Guardian pointed out that Ericsson and Nokia also have patent filings predating .com's.
NVIDIA has released the GeForce GTX 780. Card offers 3 gigabytes of 384-bit GDDR5 memory, 4 teraflops, 2,304 CUDA cores, and draws 250 watts. Also, NVIDIA claims a 5 dBA noise drop compared to the 580 GTX. 780 cards arrive in stores today for $649 in the U.S., £549 in the U.K., and €539, excluding tax, in Europe.
So apparently Twitter is taking this whole big budget advertising thing seriously. Now with a big focus on TV and your living room. It's all the rage. Today in New York, the company announced Twitter Amplify, a way of bringing real-time video into the site with initial partners including the broadcasters BBC America, Fox, Fuse, and the Weather Channel. It also announced TV ad targeting, which is one of the first products after the company's acquisition of Bluefin Labs.
If you've been waiting for the Kindle Fire HD to come to your country, you now have a much greater chance that it has. Amazon announced Thursday the Kindle Fire HD and the Kindle Fire HD 8.9-inch tablets are available for pre-order in more than 170 countries and will start shipping June 13th. Like all non-US models, the tablets are Wi-Fi only and price will vary by region.
Payment company Square is coming to Japan. Now, Square is partnering up with Sumitomo Mitsui Card Corporation to bring its service to the country. The company also helped launch Visa in Japan. Square will charge a 3.25% transaction rate in Japan, which is higher than the 2.75% rate you can get in the United States.
This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, gallery, online store. They upgraded their platform last fall, and they haven't looked back since. They keep going. They keep rolling out cool stuff. Make sure you get the most from your recent innovation. Squarespace has a 24/7 support team, too. So you can get live chat during the week and extremely fast email support throughout the day and night. And I've tried it. They are fast at getting back to you on email. Plus, with plans starting as low as $8 a month for software and hosting, it's an exceptional value. You get new features like the events collection. You get beautiful templates like the Momentum cinematic full bleed image display template. And it's fast and easy to use. That's the part I like. Everything's drag and drop. Their page builder tool, layout engine, lets you customize pages in seconds. You just drag a block of content over there. You got a video, put the video, drag it in there where you want it to be. Oh, wait, I didn't want the video down there. I wanted it up above. Just drag it up there. Text, social media content, all works the same way. And in just a few clicks, their style editor tool lets you select fonts, colors, and layouts to make those beautiful templates the right color for your brand or just kind of tweak them to be exactly the way you want. Make them uniquely yours. Also, don't forget about their powerful e-commerce solution. They let you sell physical and digital goods now with their e-commerce solution. Best mobile experience, social media accounts. You can publish to and from things like Twitter and Instagram and Pinterest. Just a click of a button. Squarespace integrates all your website needs into one platform. Domains, design, development, commerce, hosting, and 24/7 customer support. For a free trial, go to squarespace.com. Sign up for a free account. No, you do not have to give them your credit card number. Just start trying it out. Build your website. Maybe import an old blog. And then if you decide to purchase, remember this code, TNT5. Get 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, monthly or annual plans. And don't forget, free domain registration for the annual plan subscriptions. At squarespace.com, use that offer code TNT5. Everything you need to create an exceptional website. And we thank Squarespace for their support of Tech News Today. Joining us now to discuss the stories in the world of technology, very happy to have Rich DeMuro of KTLA, former CNET colleague of mine. Good to have you back, Rich.
Hey, good to be here, Tom, Sarah, Ayaz, Jason. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me again.
Hey, Rich.
Let's start off talking a little bit about the post-PC era. Wait, don't stop your podcast. This might be interesting, actually. Lenovo and HP both announced their earnings, and they were both better than expected, although two very different tales. Lenovo increased shipments, now only 0.4% year over year, but the entire industry, according to Lenovo, is down 14.2%. And that's about what you hear from other sources as well. 10% year over year PC growth versus an 8% industry decline, 4% increase in revenue, 90% increase in profits year over year. They shipped 52.4 million PCs in the year. And they said, look, if you're worried about the fact that we're too reliant on PCs, even though we're kicking ass with those, 3.7 times increase in their smartphone numbers, and they're the number two smartphone maker in China now. Compare that to HP, laptops down 24%, desktops down 18%, revenue down 20%, the consumer division revenue down 29%, earnings down 32%. They're still the leader in market share, according to IDC, but just barely in front of Lenovo. But the market was excited because this is not as bad as they expected it to be. So it looks like maybe Meg Whitman is turning that battleship around slowly. The question is HP, Lenovo, or neither one of these companies the future of the PC maker in the so-called post-PC era? Rich, what do you think?
Oh, gosh. I think Lenovo's doing well because, the companies are still buying their computers. They're sort of a corporate machine. And the phones over there in Asia are doing really well. And HP really doesn't have any strong mobile presence, whether it's tablets, phones. And it's really just consumer computers, which obviously we know people are not buying anymore. So they're going into Best Buy. They're picking up an iPad or some other sort of tablet. Are they the future PC maker? That's a tough one. I mean, who's really to choose from these days anymore between them and Dell and HP and Lenovo? I mean, people are going for price at this point. If they're still buying a computer, if you're not getting a high-end machine, you're just going for the cheapest machine you can get out there. But I am surprised their revenues are up 90%. So, I mean, 90% increase of profits. What does that mean? That everything that they're making is actually costing them less and they're just making a killing on it?
Yeah, well, they're in China, so I guess that saves them some money, but maybe you're right. Maybe they've got a little supply chain magic going on, keeping those costs down. They're definitely bucking the trend and selling computers in greater numbers, but the whole trend is going down. Is Lenovo just experiencing a temporary swim upstream effect? Are they going to get washed away?
I don't think this is temporary for Lenovo. They seem to be pretty, they seem to have a good direction this whole time. Even when the PC market's slumping, they're capable of handling all the changes. They were pretty forward-thinking by putting Android on their devices. HP is getting into that game with the Slatebook X2. They've had that other slate that runs Android. So HP is trying to diversify its lineup a bit, and they're also unifying their design language on HP. So when you see an HP device, you know what that is. I think Lenovo also has that stronghold of the ThinkPad line. That thing always gets people excited because no matter what, that's always well built, great keyboard,
and the keyboard is great.
Exactly, and that keyboard has not changed for the most part.
Really care about keyboards.
I do care about keyboards because I actually use them.
Right,
it's a crazy idea, and the Lenovo still is killing it on that.
I agree with the keyboard thing. I want to rip that keyboard out of Lenovo and put it on every other laptop I use. I think what's interesting, though, is laptops down 24% for HP, desktops down 18%. Also, it was PCs that made more money than the mobile computers for Lenovo. Is it just because PCs have bottomed out and they can't go down anymore, do you think?
Yeah, I don't think. It just seems like the growth in the PC sector is just not there right now. And until, you know, these companies sort of shift, you know, they're still holding on to what they have. You know, people still need to replace their laptops once in a while. In the case of Lenovo or HP, they're still replacing these computers, but I just don't think we're seeing the growth there anymore. And, you know, these companies are still going to have to figure out the mobile strategy for them as well.
Yeah, and I think that's what Lenovo was trying to signal is like, look, we don't want to ignore the fact that maybe this market is going to flatten out, even as good as we are doing in it. We want to make smartphones too. Number two in China, not bad.
The fact that they mentioned that their smartphones are up in China, because this is a worldwide release. This is information that's going out across the world. So they're basically calling out the fact that, hey, you know what? We understand that the PC market is kind of changing, but look what we're doing. We're sort of killing it with the smartphone market in China. And that's a big place. And in a country like the U.S. where you see that and you go, oh, I didn't really know that Lenovo made a lot of smartphones, because here in the U.S. they're not a popular brand, if any. I'm not sure that anyone has a handset with them on the main carriers.
All right, let's turn our attention to email. Mailbox has a new version for iPad. Are people still gaga over the Mailbox app, Sarah?
Well, Tom, I think for a while part of the gaga-ness was that Mailbox was that iPhone app that was restricting user downloads because they wanted to deal with the huge rush in interest, which worked really well for the company. It has since let all users in. But Mailbox now has an iPad app. Now, the iPad app is going to look a lot like the iPhone app. It certainly works exactly like the iPhone app does. I've got an email over here. What's nice about the iPad is, of course, it has some screen real estate. So I've got my messages here, and then I can dive into a particular message over here on the right-hand side. I've got my various Gmail accounts that I have hooked up to Mailbox here on the left. But the essence of Mailbox works the same way. You swipe right to archive. You swipe deep right to delete. You swipe left to add to, or basically to say, I want to deal with this later. And then deep left to add it to a list. You know, you've got these little options like, I want to get back to this later tonight, this weekend. The idea behind Mailbox and the reason that it's worked so well is it wants to force you to always achieve inbox zero. Give an action item to every single email that comes in, And then you don't actually ever have an inbox that's piled up and makes you feel frustrated and overwhelmed. What's nice about the iPad app as well is, even though it does make use of, in my opinion, the real estate that the iPad affords us, it doesn't function any differently than the iPhone. I mean, at all. There's not even any sort of like, here's an extra bell and whistle for iPad users. And I think that as far as it being a streamlined experience across at least the iOS universe, because iOS is the only place that you can use Mailbox, it works to its advantage. Ayaz, have you played around with this? Did you download it this morning?
I have not tried out the iPad version of it, but if it sounds like if what you're saying is true, and I was looking at your demo, it's pretty much the iPhone app again, and yes. I use the iPhone app on my iPad, so I've experienced this already. It just seems really reminiscent of the stuff I've been using on Android, actually. The Gmail apps are built the same way, these little swipes, these actions. So I don't know if it's going to be the same media darling as it was when it first launched, because now it's available for everybody, so anybody can get it, and now it's up against every other mailbox app that exists, including the revamped Gmail, which does a lot of the same things that does. These little additions to your action items, I guess, you can have those lists. That's a nice feature that people, I think, will enjoy. But like you're saying, because it's the iPad, they could have a lot more data on there. So this two-pane approach that's been going on forever.
You know,
they've got to build in some kind of added value if you're using the iPad app. But also, I mean, to me, I'm not really hot on the whole mailbox thing anyway, because it's sort of a middleman for your email. And yeah, I get the whole inbox zero thing. I love that. That's one of my goals as well. But this is sort of an allusion to inbox zero, so it's not really getting you there. So I know that Dropbox paid so much money for this company, and the Android app will come out. But by the time the Android app comes out, people like me that are on an Android are going to be like, well, I've already been swiping to archive and swiping to delete. And, you sort of already have your workflow figured out. So, yeah, I don't think they're going to be the same media darling they were 3 months ago when they first launched, or 6 months ago.
Well, then again, as you said, Rich, they were acquired by Dropbox for what is reported to be about $100 million. That was 37 days after the app officially launched. So pretty good turnaround. It's kind of interesting. Yeah. Underwood, the CEO and co-founder, talked to Business Insider and kind of answered why he thought that it got such a big frenzy. And he said that, well, they did a few things right. Before the app even launched, they had put together a production video back in December and kind of leaked it out to a few members of the press. That got shared a lot, to the point where the team, 15 people at the time, sat down and said, we're not going to be able to handle all this interest. Too many people are going to download this app. What do we do? Let's create a virtual queue, a queue that doesn't really exist, and then we'll let users know you're number 20,000. But there are 20,000 people behind you, so don't worry, you're not last in line. And it's all kind of this social engineering thing that made Mailbox turn into a huge deal.
And that's a pretty genius story. Absolutely. Sarah, what you're saying there is every bit of it is marketing, and it's all brilliant. Because here's the thing. There are so many apps that come out every day. This app really got so much press based on the fact that they did those smart things. They came out with a video that people were able to watch. So many times apps come out and there's really no way to like try them out or see what they're all about because they don't have a nice video like this one. And the queue thing was brilliant as well. So they were able to get into the minds of many people, you know, whether this is an amazing app or not or an original idea. It doesn't really matter at this point because it's gotten a lot of people on board and a lot of people have been able to see what it's all about. So I think they're pretty smart in what they did.
From the future of email to the return of the Mac versus PC gestalt, Ayaz, Microsoft firing the shot this time, not Apple.
That's right. Microsoft's got a new ad promoting its Windows 8 tablets. Now in the ad, there's an Asus VivoTab smart tablet placed next to an iPad. And as features are shown on the 8 tablet, you can hear Siri on the iPad say it doesn't do those features. At the end, Siri suggests, how about we play chopsticks on a piano? Jason, could you run the ad with the audio? Because it's a bit strange.
Sorry, I don't update like that. I'm sorry, I can only do one thing at a time. I guess PowerPoint isn't one of those things. Should we just play chopsticks?
And the tagline is less talking, more doing. The Atlantic Wire says the ad shows a little desperation on Microsoft's part. TechCrunch says the ad shows that Microsoft doesn't get the tablet market. Rich, what's your take on the ad? Is it going to win over people?
This ad's not going to win over one person, but it sure is funny. And, the thing about the iPad is, and I go over this all the time, I've got a Surface test unit. And, you know, the beauty of the Surface is what Microsoft had in mind is the perfect computer, because when you travel for work, you want to bring nowadays, you want to bring your laptop so you can actually get work done with a full keyboard and a mouse. And then, of course, you have this other side when you're flying there, when you're, you know, ready, when you're done with everything else, you just want to sit and watch a movie on your tablet. So the idea is perfect, but the execution, the reality is most people don't function that way. So you end up bringing both devices, and the iPad is great at everything it does well. It does the movies well. It, you know, the apps have been written in such a way that, yeah, it's a touchscreen. There is no keyboard, but it, you kind of forget about that because you're in a mindset where you're saying, this is the device I want. So this ad, yeah, sure, they're showing little side things and the, you know, watch surfing the web, watching Twitter while you watch a movie. But the reality is, do you really want to do that? Do you really need to do that? Do you care to do that? I don't think so. But I love that they're doing this. I mean, it's pretty bold on Microsoft's part to actually come out with an ad like this.
There are some, TechCrunch called it, or no, they call it desperate. Sorry, Atlantic Wire calls it desperate. But isn't this the same strategy that worked for Samsung where they said, hey, yeah, that thing is really cute and everything. The iPhone is great, but we can do more.
I guess so. I think Samsung, though, has products that people, even if they weren't taking pot shots at Apple in advertisements, I think that the products would speak for themselves. Microsoft has more of an issue comparing the Surface to the iPad. And I think as an iPad user, I look at a commercial like that and I chuckle because I do think it's pretty clever. But it's like, well, Siri's not the number one thing I'm using on my iPad at all. So I get that they're saying the Surface does more than the iPad, but it kind of focuses on Siri as, if you're trying to use Siri all day long, then maybe the Surface Pro is the better tablet for you. And I just don't think that many people even relate to the iPad in that way.
Well, yeah, they're actually promoting the Asus VivoTab, not the Surface.
Which
is a much lower cost PC.
Oh, right, because of course it's the $449.
It's the $450 PC that you can get as a tablet. So I think that might be a smart move. Tom, what do you think about not promoting the Surface and actually promoting a third party partner?
I think what Microsoft is doing here is actually trying to promote Microsoft as being back in the conversation. It's easy to look at this, and I agree with Rich. I don't think this necessarily convinces someone not to buy an iPad. But what it does convince them is, wow, Microsoft is making some pretty hip and cool stuff that's comparable to the iPad, and maybe it's even cheaper than the iPad. Well, that's interesting. And we weren't doing this 2 to 3 years ago. We weren't talking about Microsoft. They weren't part of the conversation. And now they are. And I don't think you can undervalue that achievement, even if you don't think. Even if you're one of the people who's like, I think the Surface is a flop. I think Windows 8 is tired and over and stupid. And I'm not saying I agree or disagree with you on those. But I think what you are doing is you're talking about Microsoft when you talk about phones. You're talking about Microsoft when you talk about tablets. In ways that we weren't a few years ago. And that was the thing that struck me when I watched this ad is Microsoft actually looks like they're hanging in there with the Apples of the world now. And that's something new that I don't think you should lose perspective on.
Yeah, unlike the Scroogled ads and basically or the Gmail man parodies, all these things of knocking these really well-established things, it seems like since Microsoft is the well-established player in the PC market, it seems a little strange that they have to call attention to themselves. Hey, by the way, we make PCs that compete with tablets. So I think it's a little strange in one respect, but I still think that this idea of, hey, yeah, Microsoft can power a tablet, you just kind of forgot that because you're used to seeing Windows on a desktop.
But I think the biggest irony here is when you're really comparing, and I was talking about the Surface at the beginning, I know this is a smart tablet but from Asus, but the reality is when you're actually comparing the iPad, what that is, to a Windows tablet, like a Surface or this Asus that really does not run the full version of Windows, when you're comparing those things, the iPad actually blows it away because there are thousands more better apps that you can run on a tablet that doesn't have a keyboard, and these apps are beautifully crafted. So when you really compare those two things, it's actually kind of ironic because the iPad is superior. So, you know, if they were comparing it to sort of the actual Surface Pro, which you can run full Windows in the background and actually do all the cool things you want to do on a computer as well, then, you know, maybe the conversation's better. But right now, when you get a Surface tablet, you go to download more than just the Office apps, you know, after that and after a couple of the built-in stuff, you're like, wait a second. Where's the rest of the stuff on here? I can't really do anything I can do on an iPad.
Yeah, it's the tablet that's cheaper than the iPad, not the Surface Pro, and that's a very good point. Let's take a quick break and thank our other sponsor for today's show, Tonks.org. Sarah, I got a bag of Tonks.org beans upstairs.
You know, it's so funny that you mentioned that because I've got one as well. Yeah, these are Guatemala Antigua Santa Clara fresh roasted whole bean coffee beans. Now, of course, they're not already they're not already ground up, because that would mean that they weren't very fresh. And the whole point of Tonks is to deliver fresh coffee to you once every 2 weeks, nice big bag like this, so that you always have fresh coffee, because the cafes want to fool you and make you think that you've got to go to some fancy cafe in order to get the best coffee. But really, it's about the beans. The beans have to be fresh. They can't be sitting around on shelves for a long time. You don't want them ground up already. I mean, that's a surefire way to have crappy beans. And, you know, I'm pretty sick of waking up before the coffee shop closest to me opens and sitting around for half an hour wanting to die because I'm not awake yet until the coffee shop opens. I've got Tonks now. And if Tonks is delivering fresh coffee right to my door, and the team behind Tonks is very, very serious about their beans. I mean, they talk to growers all around the world in order to get the best coffee to their customers. They source directly from the growers, so that'll make you feel happy. And because of their relationships, they can get the best beans when they're at their peak. It really is about great beans, and you don't need fancy equipment. And in fact, if you go to tonks.org/TNT. You can learn a little bit more about the kind of equipment that Tonks will suggest to you. And this is not like expensive stuff. These are cool people who really love their coffee, and they know that in order to get it to you, there are a few very, very important things that they have to follow. So again, if you're hitting a cafe most mornings, you probably want to think about a biweekly subscription to Tonks Coffee. Again, they source directly from the growers. They roast it for you. They ship within 24 hours, so it's as fresh as can be. It's a subscription service, but they're offering a free sample to our viewers and listeners. Sounds good, right? You want a big bag of beans like the one I've got? I think you want to visit tonks.org/TNT to get some for yourself. Or hey, if you're not a caffeine drinker, or if you just don't like coffee, you obviously know somebody who does. Coffee lovers unite. Tonks.org/TNT. Maybe get one as a gift for someone you love. And we thank Tonks for sponsoring this episode of TNT. Dynamite.
Your mic is muted, Tom.
Muted my mic, and because I wanted to run upstairs and get beans, but I didn't. let's go on to the next story. Actually, Samsung Galaxy S4. We heard the sales figures in the news fuse, and we heard the HTC sales figures in the news fuse. Sarah, break it down for us.
Yeah, it's a tale of two phones, I guess. Samsung's Galaxy S4 says 10 million sales, 10 million sales. No, those are global channel sales. That means they're not direct sales to consumers, which basically translates more to shipping numbers. But still, that's only since April 27th. So very healthy numbers. It is a record for Samsung. As I mentioned in the news fuse, if you compare it to just the Galaxy S3, Galaxy S3 took 50 days to get to that 10 million figure. So absolutely 100% a hit for Samsung. And they also announced that they're going to be adding new colors to the S4 lineup this summer. Purple Mirage is one of them. Brown Autumn is another. Ooh, I don't know if I like the idea of a brown autumn phone, but hey, maybe you do. Maybe you really like fall. If you compare that to, let's say, the iPhone, right? The iPhone sold 5 million handsets in its first weekend, and those are direct sales. So again, there's a little bit of a Samsung likes to count their numbers a little bit differently than Apple, but still, in basically just a month, 10 million global channel sales. Compare that HTC, which has sold what HTC says is around 5 million of its HTC One. That launch was about a month ago as well. Now, those are also not bad numbers. I mean, by all accounts, people say, oh, you know, HTC is full of bad news these days. You've got people saying, jump ship, it's a terrible company, and former people working for the company with nightmare stories about management, basically bleeding out management positions. But that's not a terrible number either for HTC. An unnamed executive over at HTC said, orders are pretty good so far. There's still more orders than what we can supply. The exec said it's component shortages, basically, to account for the supply issues, and that the company will have a better idea of how the phone is doing again next month. Although the HTC First, apparently not coming to the UK because the performance wasn't so great in the US. Rich, what do you think is the number that HTC has to hit in order for people to consider HTC anything but a failure right now? Is 5 million good enough in a month?
I think $5 million is actually pretty good for them. I really do, because HTC is a company that, you know, until then, they weren't really killing it when it came to phones. I think that Samsung obviously is just doing amazing with this phone. My people know about this phone. You know, I was in the vet the other day, and the girl saw me carrying it, and she's like, "Oh my God, is that the S4?" And I'm like, "Yeah." She's like, "That's what I have. It's the best phone ever. People talk about the iPhone, but this is the greatest thing ever." I think that people know about it. It's finally the first phone that they're saying, you know, I know the iPhone. I know what the iPhone can do, but I see my friends with these Android phones, specifically these Samsung S3s, and they're having a lot of fun. They're doing some cool stuff. I want to take a little bit of that. So this is the first time I'm thinking maybe I will go outside the iPhone. With HTC, I don't know if this is going to save them or not. You know, the 5 million sales. I mean, that's half of what Samsung did. I mean, come on, for a phone that, you know, you probably saw 5 billion more advertisements for the S4 than you did for the HTC One. And they also had the flop with the first. So I think that kind of leaves a bad taste in the mouth with people because they're seeing that too. HTC, you know, my money was on the S4 from the start when I saw both of these things together. I think they're both great phones, but, you know, I don't know. It's going to be tough for HTC because I think this is a good number, but it's not blockbuster.
I also think the HTC One on its own is going to help HTC out, or is there too much bad news around the rest of the company?
I think the phone can help them out long term. The HTC One brand is still relatively new compared to the Galaxy S line. The Galaxy S3 was the first S3 that actually had the name S3 on every carrier, so that name became well known instead of like Skyrocket and whatever silly additions were added to the S2. So with HTC, they have this somewhat of a new strategy of, you know, slimming down their portfolio of phones, and this HTC One is supposed to be beautiful hardware. But like in the story we were talking about yesterday with HTC in disarray, this concept of the CEO not making the right decision when it came to the phone, causing delays for the HTC One to come out. On top of that, they just could not get the suppliers to get everything in line. Samsung's got that nailed. They are the supplier for most of their products, so they can handle and streamline that. HTC right now is struggling because their management is shifting so much, and they're trying to figure out how can we feed the demand. They're actually running into an unusual problem. When they have a larger demand than supply, they need to get their stuff together if they want to ever approach Samsung-like numbers.
Now, I know a lot of you out there are like, you know what? Phones are great. I understand. Everybody's into phones, but I'm not into phones. I'm into flying wind power. Well, we've got a story for you. We talked about it in the news fuse. Makani. Google acquired it. It allows you to create power by having an airplane kind of, or an airplane-like device kind of fly up and generate wind power. It's tethered to the ground. It's an example of what Google's doing with Google X. It was bought for Sergey Brin and Astro Teller's Google X division. And Business Week is who broke this in a longer article about what they're doing at Google X by Brad Stone. Eric Teller, or Astro is his nickname, said, "We should be focused on making the world a better place. And once we do that, the money will come back and find us." And it talks a lot about how Google's trying not to be like the Manhattan Project or the Bell Labs or Xerox PARC in the sense that it's, you know, totally disconnected from the world. Their mission seems to be to make the world a better place. What do you guys think of Google X? Has Google transcended its mission? Its mission statement on the web still says to organize the world's information and make it universally accessible and useful. But at the same time, you got Larry Page up there talking about having a beta testing country. And you've got Google X just going out and saying, we need to improve the world. Rich, is this too far? Is Google getting a little lofty?
I thought Google X was the phone that was going to save us all, that was coming out at I.O. So I'm just disappointed in general. I thought Brad Stone had the exclusive on that. But, you know, I think that Google, they're looking for inefficiencies in the world and they're trying to solve them. And that's really what it comes down to. I know that their first mission was to organize the world's information, but I think it just goes further than that. And I don't think they're going too far. I think that what they're doing is amazing. And I understand that it's kind of creepy, it's kind of scary, but somebody has to do it. You know, we've got these large, big established companies that Google is, you know, same thing. They're like a blue chip company basically at this point, you know, but they're thinking a little bit different. And I know that Bell Labs and all that stuff, they used to do that kind of stuff. But I just feel like we need more innovation in our world at this point. And I know startups are doing that, but why not? Why can't a big company do that as well? They've got the resources, they've got the money, and certainly the cachet. So all power to them.
Ayaz, do you think Google is trustworthy in guiding the future of the planet?
Sure. I'll go with sure as an answer. I was just thinking about if Google's bothering to get wind power and they're making sure that they can have lower cost power, it's probably about really the bottom line. They want to make sure they have to have these giant server farms. They have to power a lot of things. They want to build infrastructure everywhere. You need a lot of power to keep all this stuff running. And if Google can figure out, hey, we can make the world a better place and we can save some money while we're doing it, I think that might be the more cynical viewpoint of, yeah, they just want to save some bucks. And if they want to do this with a wind turbines, that's the way to go.
Sarah, what do you think of all this? I mean, Google makes all their money on search. If search goes away, I don't know how they fund all these giant research projects. Should investors be nervous about that?
I think Google, I mean, of all the companies, and yes, Google's very concerned about its bottom line, but Google has people at the top who really do, I believe, care about this stuff. I mean, look at something like Google Fiber, right? I mean, that is supposed to bring, you know, higher speed internet service than anybody could ever hope for in certain markets. Well, as I said, that requires infrastructure on Google's part. Google would like that to be as low power as possible. Wind energy, clean energy helps Google, but it's also technology that can help other companies as well. And when you think of that on a global scale, I mean, you have people in some pretty dire situations where this sort of technology is really, really important for all of us, but particular markets in general. So I think that this is like Google doing good and Google being able to lower costs of running its operation. And I don't think the two are mutually exclusive.
And they seriously talk in this article about having considered levitation, teleportation as possible projects. They turned against them, not because they were impractical, but because they were impractical, not because they were crazy, just because the technology isn't there yet. Maybe we'll get back to that in a few years. So pretty interesting. It is the modern Xerox PARC. It is the modern Manhattan Project. A little closer in achievability is the Internet of Things. And Iaz, it looks like the Xbox One is positioning itself to maybe be involved in that somehow.
Yeah, the Microsoft Chief Product Officer of Interactive Entertainment, Mark Whitten, he gave an interview with Fast Company talking about how the Xbox One will become a central hub of pretty much home automation. Now, Whitten says there will never be a single protocol for connected devices and that a hub would have to speak a lot of different languages, like an Xbox. Xbox One is supposed to have open support of third-party apps as well, and they're saying the smart glass is going to allow you to control Home 2.0. That's the nickname there right now, and Whitten himself said that's not a good name for it. Home 2.0 devices, you can control them with smart glass using your Windows device, Android, iOS, any touchscreen you have. The hub would use a combo of Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, and IR blasters. Also, they say they are advanced IR blasters, so they're not like the crappy ones you're used to with the old days, with your old TiVo. There's no release date for Home 2.0, and a lot of this stems from Microsoft's acquisition of the home automation company ID8 Group R2 Studios back in January. The Wall Street Journal reported that Google was trying to get this company, Apple was trying to get this company, but Microsoft won out when it came to this. Rich, home automation seems like it's kind of a fringe thing right now. It seems like it's sort of coming into its own. Could an Xbox One hub make it more mainstream?
Yeah, sure. But so could the iPad. So could a computer. So could 1,000 other devices that are all fighting for this space. This is such an emerging place. You know, our homes are like 1/1,000,000th of the, you know, of the tech they're going to have in the future. I mean, realistically, most homes aren't even doing anything right now, you know, but you go to these Lutron, these companies that control lighting and stuff, they want to have everything wired. So of course, Xbox wants to be in on this. Microsoft wants to be in on this. This has been sort of a dream of Microsoft forever to wire the home up. And, you know, obviously now it's wireless, but I just think they're sort of, it's a lot of busy talk. I think a lot of companies want to be in this space, but at the same time, you got to think there's a lot at stake here. And a lot of companies, if you control that automation, you control a lot for the house. So, of course, the iPad wants to be there. Cell phones want to be there. Android wants to be there as a controller. Now, I do think it's a good idea. You have, you know, let's say you have your Xbox. I'm all about having just one device under your TV if possible. So if this Xbox can interface with all the 10 different sort of, you know, drop cams you have in your house or the, you know, home security system that's provided by ADT or whatever, that's great. I think that's a good idea. But is this going to be the end all for home automation? I don't think so.
So we have the rumored specs of the Xbox. Pretty much, it seems like it's overkill for gaming. It's got a ton of CPU power. There was the discussion of having three OSs in there. There's a Windows kernel in there. There's all kinds of things. Is the Xbox actually the right device to be able to handle all of these different things, home automation, gaming, entertainment?
It seems like it's a smart move, right? I mean, Microsoft already tipped their hat that they want to be the future TV box. We talked about that a little bit yesterday in that they are positioned with that 500 gigabyte drive. And granted, you got to store all your games on there to become the one box once television comes to the internet. But they also, I didn't realize, want to be home automation. And they've been involved. This isn't the first home automation project that Microsoft has ever announced or come forward with. But the idea of saying we're already in your living room for games, we're going to be in there for TV, and we'll be in there for home automation makes perfect sense. I do look at these specs and wonder, can it handle all of those things? Trying to promise everything becomes an issue when people want to do everything. If I want to play video games, watch TV, and do home automation, is it going to crap out? You know, am I not going to be able to unlock my door or turn off my lights because it's, you know, running low on resources while it's recording DVRs and uploading video game footage? I don't know.
We've seen a lot of smart devices come in. We got the Nest showed up. I've seen Schlage locks that are attached to your smartphone so you can unlock it using your smartphone. Mm-hmm. And there are backups in case something does fail like that. Do you think that you need an actual centralized computer to do this, like an Xbox, or can an iPad or a phone handle all that?
Well, I mean, I always sort of default to the phone because that's usually what I'm carrying more than anything else. Yeah, the idea that an Xbox could be the number one automation machine. Well, that's still some, well, I mean, I guess you can interface it with it from an app. Maybe I don't live in a big enough house. So I'm like, you know, my front door is like right behind my couch. So
yeah, I'm like, if I remember to lock the door at night, that's good enough. You know, like it's like I would love to have an automated house, but it's one of those things where this appeals to people that have big houses that have a lot of money that can put all these automation things in. And I'm not sure that that's mainstream just yet. You know, if you get a home alarm system from, you know, a company, for a lot of people, that might be good enough. But to get the blinds to come down automatically and the lights to come on, the music, we have systems that can do that. But, you know, it's one of these things that's really tough to kind of comprehend right now because most people are just like, it's way above me. But, you know, like I said, if the Nest can interact with this thing and all these different companies that make these products can sort of interface with the Xbox, that would be kind of cool.
Sure. It's like the high-end home theater audio, right? I mean, a lot of people are just like, I don't care. I just really am never going to care about that center channel. Oh, well. But the people who do care want it to work flawlessly and to be a beautiful experience. And if the Xbox One can actually be the home automation machine, you obviously have that market of people who will pay top dollar for something like that.
I think with the Kinect, with its constant microphone that you can say Xbox on, you're going to get used to talking to your home. And if it can control more devices, I think people are going to welcome that in general. You can use your phone. It's always this singular experience. But if it's a home-based thing that's always on and it's controlling your lights, or like Xbox, I want to watch a movie, throws on a movie, takes care of the lights, does all these things, I think that makes a lot of sense, even maybe if you don't have a large place, but you'd like to be lazy like me.
Xbox locked doors. I'm sorry, your Xbox Live account has expired.
Yeah.
Doors will maybe remain unlocked.
Xbox, renew Xbox.
Provide Xboxes are fire. Seriously. Override.
Let's move on to the random item. A Brazilian ad agency has built a campaign for Domino's Pizza there involving DVDs. Now, DVD rental is still bigger in Brazil than it is here in the United States. But when people rent DVDs, once they pull them out after watching them, a coating will have heated up and started to emit a pizza-like odor. And a message on the DVD will prompt people to buy a pizza next time they enjoy a movie.
Weird.
So many advances in pizza technology. We've seen pizza vending machines, 3D printers that are making pizzas, and now your DVDs can smell like pizzas.
Argo, 007, Dread and Dark Knight, all stamped with thermal ink and flavored varnish. Flavored varnish.
Yummy. I
mean,
I love it.
Depends on how good it smells. I mean, if it smells good, I probably will order a pizza because that's usually how it works.
A lot of times these fake smells do not smell like the thing they are supposed to smell like. This could totally backfire.
Right.
And, you know.
Or if it smells really good, you might eat the DVD. It's a real problem.
Or, yeah, true. I mean, I hope you get to choose if, like, pepperoni, you know, like all the different. I mean, it's brilliant marketing. It's smart. People will try it out, you know, just to see what it smells like. I think it's a good idea. Is it, you know, is it $1 million idea? Probably, actually. They probably paid a lot for it.
Yeah, probably cost them that much, exactly.
Yeah.
Let's check the calendar, Sarah. What's happening?
All right. The Sony Xperia Tablet Z is shipping tomorrow. That's May 24th. Apple has said the keynote for its Worldwide Developers Conference will occur Monday, June 10th. That's happening, of course, at Moscone Center in San Francisco. AT&T is going to start carrying the Samsung Galaxy S4 in Aurora Red on June 14th. You can start pre-orders tomorrow. And Google is going to upgrade its SSL certificates to 2048-bit keys by the end of 2013, says the company. They're going to start that process on August 1st.
Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
Oh my gosh, it's an email from Mike. He says, hello crew, listening to show 759 about Google working on the voice search. I'm a 40-something guy that is very used to typing search terms into my search bar. I have an 11-year-old daughter to whom we've given a Chromebook. She immediately took to the ability to hit the microphone button and speak her searches. So I think, again, we're looking at a technology aimed at the next generation of internet device users and not aimed at those of us that are very keyboard-centric and are interfacing with these devices. Thanks.
I checked to make sure he had Safe Search on. That was my first question. If you're going to let your three-year-old do image searches via voice.
Well, she's 11.
There was a guy on Twitter. It must be a different guy then, who had a younger, like a three-year-old.
So it seems like the kids like the microphones.
Yeah.
And us old people like keyboards, like ThinkPads.
I want to do it the way I used to.
I can tell you one thing, just in my short time with Glass. I was actually wearing it this morning because I have to talk about it next week on Before You Buy. And I was walking around the house doing the, okay, Glass, take a picture, blah, blah, blah. My three-year-old totally clued in on it, and she picked up on it right away. She started yelling, okay, Glass, to try and take a picture.
Oh, no.
Completely.
That's hilarious. All right. Well, that wraps it up for us. Thank you all for joining us. Thank you, Rich DeMuro, for joining us particularly. Always great to have you on the show, man.
Thanks for having me. Always a blast, guys.
Let folks know where they can find what you're doing online, how to watch your stuff from KTLA, all of that.
You can go to richontech.tv or richdemuro.com or just search Rich on Tech on Google, and hopefully it still comes up number one.
Good. I think it should. It ought to.
I hope so.
I'm filing a bug. That is it for us. You can help us determine our stories at our subreddit. TechNewsToday.reddit.com is the place to go to submit stories and vote on those that either you or others have submitted. It helps us pick our lineup each and every day. You can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. Email us, tnt@twit.tv, and give us a call. Leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. I'm off traveling tomorrow, but Sarah Niaz will be here along with Darren Kitchen and Len Peralta illustrating the episode. We'll see you then.